Engaging conversation on the most urgent problem of our day and what you can do about it.
Now, the End Abortion Podcast by Priests for Life.
Hello, everybody. It's me, Brian Kemper, with Stand True, the youth outreach of Priests for Life. And this is Pro-Life is the New Punk Rock. I'm excited about this episode tonight. We're going to talk about the effect of abortion on men. But before we get into that, I just had a great weekend at the Supreme Court, where we had prayer rallies and worship time and gathering people together, praying for an end to abortion. And it was absolutely an amazing time. We know that this new case, the Mississippi, the Dobbs case, is coming up. The Supreme Court will be arguing on December 1st. I will be there at the Supreme Court for the day of the argument. And hopefully some of you will be able to make it out there to pray with us and stand for life. But today I have a guest who is a friend of mine and a colleague and somebody who really is an expert on the effects of abortion on men. I know we talk so much about the effects of abortion on women and the children, but abortion does affect more than just those directly immediately involved in the family members and also the fathers. The fathers are sort of the forgotten one when it comes to how we talk about abortion. Men are told we have no opinions since we have no uterus, yet it takes a man to create a child also. So I want to welcome Kevin Burke of Rachel's Vineyard and also Silent No More. Kevin, how are we doing today?
Good, brother. Good to be with you.
Thank you very much. I know punk rock is not really your genre, but this is not really about music. We really believe that it is the punk rock thing is to be pro-life and to be conservative, especially with what's going on in the world today. Kevin, I think that you have a unique perspective on the abortion issue, dealing with reading lots of your articles about like men in prison and the effect of abortion, how they ended up becoming criminals and stuff like that. So I'd love for you to just kind of share your heart right now on some of the work that you're doing there with Silent No More and Rachel's Vineyard.
Sure. I'm going to be touching on a number of different stories and themes that you can find in my book, Tears of the Fisherman. And that's available at, you can go to tearsofthefisherman.com and you'll get information on the book and ways that you can get a hold of that. I've been doing this for a long time. When I first got involved, it was really just to learn about this retreat that my wife Teresa developed, this weekend program for healing people after abortion. She was really ahead of the game in the sense that she realized early on how important it was that men were also part of the healing. Anybody who hears abortion stories, and even the research associated with that, you know, David Reardon does a lot of research on abortion. And he identified that in some of his research, 95% of the decisions, abortion decisions, unplanned pregnancy situations, in 95% of those cases, the man plays a key role in the woman's decision on whether to abort or have the child. They're very influential. So this whole idea that this is a woman's private healthcare decision and the man should have no say in it, well, actually, he does have a very, very powerful influence by how he responds to the pregnancy. And I saw, and I'm sure, Brian, you could speak to this as well. I saw this early on in my experience in Rachel's Vineyard, and I was hearing the stories of men who were part of abortion decisions. And boy, it was clear in two ways. One, from the men's stories, because when they would share their response, they later realized that, wow, I really abandoned her, pushed her, rationalized, you know, in different ways made her move in that direction. And they were feeling shame about that later, you know. At the time, a lot of them felt relief, but later they felt shame. But you also hear in the women's stories a lot of pain because they felt oftentimes manipulated and abandoned. And oftentimes after the relationship, after the abortion, the relationship would end anyway. So that was my initial exposure to the issue was, you know, hearing the stories of men on retreats and learning from them, you know.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've been going to abortion mills for decades, praying and counseling and activism and such. And I can tell you one of the themes that's been consistent over that whole time is seeing a man pull up, drop a woman off, drive down the street to McDonald's, and then go sit in a parking lot eating a Big Mac while his girlfriend, fiance, wife is inside about to go through a procedure that's going to end the life of his child and their child. Mm-hmm. And I would often go up and talk to the men about their responsibilities as fathers and their rights as fathers, and that the fact that they're sitting out in a car eating McDonald's instead of being in there with their significant other, it really, I called them out on cowardice, on being a coward, that they need to be in there. And so many men would tell me, but I don't think I could do anything. I don't think I could say anything. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to say. And I would tell them that I believe so often all that woman wanted to hear is their support, is that they would be there for them. All that woman wanted to know is, hey, I'm going to man up. I'm going to be a dad. I'm going to make sure that this child's taken care of. And I've seen countless men go in and try to talk to their girlfriend or their wife. And many times them end up coming out together as a family. And that's all she wanted to hear, is that he was there to support her, you know? And I feel like even in today's society, you know, we're demasculating men to the point of not standing up for their families, you know? Mm-hmm. What kind of things have you heard from men about the regret of not speaking up sooner, not saying something before they were in that situation?
Yeah. You know, the whole legalization of abortion, saying that this is okay as a way to deal with an unplanned pregnancy, that's a very powerful message from our society, legalizing the procedure. And then the experience of the messaging, the propaganda that we hear continually. It's been very effective, and it's been developed in a very sophisticated, deliberate way, which is to distance the man and to have him respond in a certain way when there is a pregnancy situation. I have to let her decide. I don't want to interfere with her decision, because she's the one that's going to have to carry the baby. Now, of course, that can be a cop out, but there's plenty of guys who sincerely believe that they're doing the best thing at that time, as you mentioned. But what I find is that even when men appear to be detached from it and having a sandwich or that kind of thing. Now, apart from men who are sociopaths, and that's going to be a very few who have no conscience, and of course, that's a very dangerous place to be. But yes. for most men, there's two ways. Either their distance, being in the parking lot eating McDonald's and dropping her off, is obviously wounding them in a very serious way, because then they're going to later regret that they didn't take action as a man, which is part of the way we're wired by God, is that the natural response is, whoa, no, you're not going to kill that. That's my son or daughter. No. I don't care how bad our situation is in the circumstances. So that's one way that men later have that express that shame at failing as a protector. The other experience is if you're intimately associated with the abortion, you're in there, you're sitting in the waiting room, or maybe in the rare instance where you're allowed in, but most cases you're going to be sitting in the waiting room. Then you feel a sense of powerlessness. You can't escape then your immediate reaction to your role in that. And so those guys are often more acutely aware, and their emotions are a little more to the surface. But I would say to you, regardless, and I would say to your viewers and to any men that are listening who may even now be thinking, well, you know what? I had that abortion when I was in college and I don't feel great about it, but I, you know, that's what she wanted. And I can't say it wasn't the best thing at the time. You know, I mean, you know, it was a complicated situation. I can't change what happened. Yeah, well, what I've learned is that within those men, when they're given an opportunity to share about what happened to them, tell their story, and be with other people who have had the same experience, what happens is they recognize that their participation in the death of their child wounded them very deeply, spiritually and emotionally. And it's a powerful thing to see that in men. It's a beautiful thing to see their healing as well. Does that make sense, Brian?
Absolutely. And I don't think that that shame probably ends with just the dads, but going into grandparents and others. I can tell you, this is a controversial statement I'm going to make. I believe that Christians oftentimes cause abortion to happen. When we look at a young pregnant girl, they're usually very scared, don't know what to do. And if they are raised in a Christian family or a stricter family, the fear of going to their parents, the amount of pastors or youth pastors that I've seen at abortion mills, but because if anyone found out that their daughter got pregnant, they're afraid of losing their church or losing their job or, you know, the shame of that. And I remember, Kevin, both you and I and Teresa all in the 90s worked with American Life League out in Virginia. And one of the things that Judy Brown taught, I think was so key and so important, was what the first words out of our mouth need to be when a daughter or a family member or anyone comes to us and scared and they're pregnant and they're not in a situation where normally that would take place, you know? And I remember how that impacted me when my daughter was not married and I walked into a hallway where she was curled up and crying. And she looked up and said, "Daddy, I'm pregnant." And I reached down and I hugged her and I just told her I loved her. And she's like, "Oh, aren't you mad at me?" And I'm like, "No, I'm not mad at you. You just told me I'm a grandfather." Like, that's the greatest news ever. I'm a grandfather. My first grandchild is now in the womb at that point. And I think that's so important for a parent to react that way and not to be, you know, angry and put shame. Pregnancy itself is not a sin. Pregnancy is not a sin. That's not the problem. And so when we find out that maybe a daughter or a grandchild or someone is pregnant, we need to at that very exact moment make sure they know how much they're loved and how much support they have. And I think that that doesn't always happen. And I'd like to hear some of your thoughts on that.
I think it was beautiful the way you responded. I think you also have a lot of experience that helps inform you to respond in that way. And I think you responded out of your own father's heart, no doubt, but you also have good background. So I would say that some folks may need to make that initial response of love, give that hug, work, and say something like, "Look, we're going to work this out together. Don't worry." They might need to take a minute or two to talk to the spouse, to a trusted friend, or and just maybe vent, because they may be struggling with anger or disappointment, and you know, some of those natural, normal feelings. Maybe they know this guy is, they're really concerned about the boyfriend. There's, you know, and it's a really complicated situation. All kinds of scenarios, right?
So there's time in the future to deal with that, when at that very moment, the most important thing is that pregnant mom.
It is. And the most, and it's really is important to respond initially with love. I'm just kind of saying also was that it's okay to have some strong feelings about it. Absolutely. You just don't necessarily want to share them at that time with your daughter or whoever the person is. And it's okay to have those feelings. Just find some place you can safely vent them. And then you can still come back.
Yes.
And be loving and caring and make a nice plan, the best plan for your daughter.
Well, it wouldn't do my daughter and my grandchild any good if I had gone and, you know, punched this guy in the face and ended up in jail. No. I wouldn't be able to help much there. I don't think that would be obviously the proper response. But I think it's so important for dads. And especially, you know, like I said, the amount of times I've met a pastor whose daughter is pregnant, and they're so worried about how the church is going to react.
Well, there's so many, I've heard so many stories on Rachel's Vineyard weekends and in my own private consultation and things, where you had people coming from good families, pro-life church families who, you know, if they were not strongly pro-life, they were definitely not rabidly pro-abortion. And yet, for the reasons you mentioned, you know, sense of disappointment, fearing public scandal, whatever the particular reasons are, my wife Teresa teaches when she talks about trauma, when you have that kind of conflict where you know what you're doing is wrong, but you're feeling pressured in any way, and pressure can be coming from your own fear of shame, your sense of not disappointing your parents or the church. When there's ever a sense of pressure, you can be assured that your reactions to that pregnancy will very likely have more intensive trauma reactions and symptoms because of that conflict. You're still going to be able to make that journey of healing, but it may be why you've experienced particular difficulty. Perhaps after the abortion, you'll find there's more acting out sexually. There's increased alcohol, drug use, et cetera, because of that that pressure and conflict.
I think part of the reason that God's given me the strength and some wisdom on this is my own birth experience. Obviously, you know, can't remember being born as much, but knowing that my mother got pregnant in 1966. I was born in 67, and she wasn't married. And back then, the pressure of a young, you know, girl just out of high school being pregnant, not married, was a thousand times worse than it is today. And knowing that my mother actually tried to find an illegal abortion and wasn't able to. And then when she finally told my grandparents that she was pregnant, they sent her to live in another city so no one would know. So no one would know that their daughter was pregnant. And so she had to go alone to San Francisco to give birth to me. And
wow.
I know how much that's affected me emotionally and spiritually, like thinking about the fact that for the first 9 months of my life, the first two thoughts about me was one, my death, and two, the shame of my existence. And I think that that's something that we need to make sure that people don't go through, not just, you know, the mom and such, but that child later finding out that kind of thing. It really affected me to know that. And it also has given me strength in the work that I do and given me more drive and passion to continue in this pro-life work. I just think that that's so important is. Even just your surroundings, I think, can affect you for years and years. That the events around that have affected me for so many years.
Well, that's very interesting, and I think there's definitely some science that would back up some of what you're saying, which is that, you know, the stress in the womb, of the, you know, when the mother's experiencing that level of anxiety and stress, that does impact the child in some ways. And you may have experienced that in your own life and had to work that through. I think it's real. I guess that's, I was thinking as you were speaking, how your own journey of kind of acting out on some of that and then, you know, finding healing in the Lord Jesus enabled you to break some of that in a sense. I don't know if it's too strong a word, but that curse in a sense, because now look how you're responding to your own daughter.
Yes.
In such a beautiful way, Christ-like way, and with the love of God the Father. So while my heart goes out for you and for your mom in those circumstances, at the same time, it's also good to see how the Lord has worked in your life, Brian.
Absolutely. And speaking of my daughter, my granddaughter, if you hear a baby in the background, they're over visiting right now. So they're in the other room, but I can hear my granddaughter.
That's great.
So when we're done with this show, I'll definitely be having some fun grandkid time. But
nice.
So Kevin, I think one of the things that has fascinated me about your writings and the research that you do is you've talked to us as a team there at Priest for Life. We're all on the pastoral team there at Priest for Life.
Right.
You've talked to us about men who end up in prison, who in turn to a life of crime, and how that can be traced back to a moment when they were complicit in an abortion. Can you talk a little bit about that, please?
Sure. And again, there's a whole chapter on this in Tears of the Fisherman. So I will kind of give you a quick condensed version of that chapter. But I had a chance a few years ago to go down to Florida because I had heard about a prison ministry there that was using the Rachel's Vineyard retreat model that they were offering in a support group format over like 10 weeks. I was very curious, well, how does this work in prison? And I went into the situation with an open mind. And what I discovered, and I interviewed a number of men who had been through the program, prisoners. I interviewed the staff who were who had set up this Rachel's Vineyard ministry, amazing people. Donna Gardner was one of them. The deacon, there was a Catholic deacon who was worked for many years in ministry in the prisons. So in meeting with these guys, talking to them, what I discovered is that this really powerful theme, and I think it really has relevance to men outside of prison. But what I discovered is that, not surprising, a number of these, I would say the majority of these men, probably all of them, had wounds with their dads. The dads were either abusive, absent, or particularly painful. They gave no attention to their sons. They were there, but they gave them no emotional attention of any kind. So this really wounded them. They had that damage of a sense of being in some ways emotionally aborted as young men. So as they enter adolescence, and they begin to act out in various ways of some of this pain in their life. There's also, a pregnancy situation and an abortion, at least one, oftentimes multiple. What I discovered is that when they had the abortion, the pre-existing issues they were having, the acting out behaviors, the way they were expressing their grief and anger and pain about whatever abuses they had experienced in their childhood, it was like putting gasoline on sparks. And now, of course, this insight comes after their healing and they look back at their life and they see that abortion. And what I discovered as a counselor and talk, and again, I confirmed this with those doing the work to say, look, am I on the right track here? Because they're seeing hundreds of these men. And the dynamic is that you have a young man with a wounded childhood, a wounded sense, a sense of being emotionally aborted, a victim in a sense, who then becomes the victimizer. And then he takes the life of his innocent child. So that's a very confusing and conflicting and powerful dynamic. And it feeds the behaviors after that. And in some ways, again, I can't quantify this, but this is what they tell me. In some ways, this contributed to this for some of them directly, but for others, it contributed to the overall dynamics that led to their criminal behavior, including murder. You'll read one of the stories in the book about a guy who's now really a saintly man. He's in prison for life, but his abortion was directly part of his journey to that. But look, even most men are not going to go to jail because of their abortion reactions. But men who have trauma and have been part of divorce in their childhood, perhaps have been sexually abused or emotionally neglected, and then are part of abortion decisions, that creates a powerful dynamic, and it points to the need for a real intensive healing process for these men, emotional and spiritual. That's what's beautiful. When you read the chapter, you'll see the transformation that happens in these guys, healed on a very deep level, because they opened the door to healing of that deep wound as father.
And I think that's amazing, like what you're doing. I think that so many men, I think a lot of men want to say something. They want to stand up when they find out their girlfriend or someone's pregnant, but they think that they're not supposed to. They're sort of told, no, that's not you don't have a uterus. You don't have a choice in this matter. You don't have anything to say. And I think that they need to understand that they do. They are not going to be a father. They are a father. At the moment that young woman becomes pregnant, she is a mother. And the father is a father. And it's time then for them to act like a father and to man up to that. And I think it's important for them to voice their opinion. I've never bought into the whole thing that you're not allowed to have an opinion on it because you're a man. That's like me saying, because I haven't been to war, I can't have an opinion on war, or because I haven't faced the death penalty, I can't have an opinion on the death penalty, or I can't have an opinion on human trafficking because I'm not involved. I have opinions on many things that I haven't been involved with, but I find important for us as human beings to stand up for. You know, we can look back in the time of the German Holocaust, the Nazi Holocaust. You know, so many people think, well, I don't have a right to say anything. I can't say anything. I'm afraid to say anything. But it was very important for people to stand up. And I look at heroes like Hans and Sophie Scholl, the White Rose Society, young people who stood up and were a voice during that time. And I think it's very important for men to stand up with women side by side, hand in hand, as we raise our voices for the children.
I think one of the ways that we do that, because we've seen this in the Silent No More Awareness campaign, we've seen it in Rachel's Vineyard, by healing those wounds to our fatherhood. You know, if we've been wounded by abortion loss, by our participation in abortion, and we didn't speak up, that's hurt us. Not only has it hurt the child, obviously, but it has hurt us as men. And in the healing journey, we'll find that God in his mercy and generosity will strengthen us as men and will call us forth in leadership in our families and communities.
Absolutely.
Just as you're saying, Brian. So part of that manning up, and amen to that, is healing.
And as we
like Rachel's Vineyard and you know,
well, we have about 3 minutes left. So part of that, 2 minutes, I want to talk about Rachel's Vineyard and the website, rachelsvineyard.org. And this is a plea and to anyone who has been affected by abortion, whether you're a mother that made that decision, or a father that lost a child, a grandparent, a sibling, someone that abortion has come into your life and caused pain and caused havoc and caused chaos. Rachelsvineyard.org is the number one website, in my opinion, that you should go to. At that point, Kevin, explain to them how they can find more information on the healing retreats and the resources available to them. In about a minute and a half, sort of give them a walkthrough of what to do.
Okay. Well, if you go to the website and you go to retreats, you'll see drop-down menu. You can enter your zip code and find retreats in your area or an area that you feel comfortable attending. The retreat runs from Friday to Sunday. Each retreat site has email and phone contacts. So you can email and phone, get more information, ask any questions that you have. There's a description of what the retreat is like. You can get a feel for that. The person you call will be happy to give you information as well. It's open to women, men, grandparents, anybody who is directly involved in the death of an unborn child and feels that's wounded them is welcome to attend a Rachel's Vineyard retreat.
And this is not just in the U.S. We're international, correct?
Oh, yes. All over the world. We have retreats all over the world, Latin America, Europe, Asia, but all across the United States as well. So that would be a good start, I would say. If you're also, there's abortionforgiveness.com, which is also a great website. You put your zip code in, and it'll show you not only Rachel's Vineyard, but other healing resources that are in your community as well.
Now, Kevin, we're about out of time, and I'm going to have you on many more times. The next time, I really want to talk about shockwaves and Silent No More. And as we've talked about this, those of you watching that maybe have been through a retreat, that have been through healing, and God has brought you out of that, and you want to tell your story, and we want to find a way to use your story to help other people, we'll talk about shockwaves and Silent No More. But we're out of time for today. Kevin, it goes by quick. You think, oh, how am I going to... It goes by quick, but I was wondering if you would be willing to just lead us in a closing prayer.
Yes. Well, I'm actually going to share the Lord's Prayer, which is the perfect prayer. It's directly from our Lord and Savior. So let's all pray this together and pray for one another as we do. Our Father, who who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who have trespassed against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For yours is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, now and forever. Amen.
Kevin, thank you so much for joining us on Pro-Life is the New Punk Rock. I am excited about this show. Hey, everybody, if you want to follow me on all social media platforms, that's at Brian Kemper, Brian with a Y. If you have questions, subjects you want me to talk about on this show, let me know. You can email me, brian@priestforlife.org. I'd love to hear from you. But until next time, this has been Brian and Kevin, and this is Pro-Life is the New Punk Rock.
This has been the End Abortion Podcast. To learn more, to help end abortion, and to connect with us on social media, visit endabortion.net.